to get started?
Well, we're starting.
Okay.
So this is our first podcast since Easter. Did we do one on Easter?
Yeah, we did. Isn't that when we did it with Inky?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's a good one.
So we've been slacking since Easter.
And we don't want to lose any of our 2 followers.
Yeah. But Raph told me today that he has subscribed to the podcast, so at least he'll know when it happens.
So for any listeners out there, please subscribe, because you don't know how regular we're going to be.
I think we should try to be regular. It's just that we've been so busy with different kinds of things.
Yeah, the weekends particularly have been busy.
Yeah.
The weekend.
And so we've thought about lots of different topics to talk about in the past few weeks. We haven't really had a chance to... Well, we haven't really had or made the time to... You know, that reminds me. I remember one time I was sitting down with Father Hartley, and I said something like, you know, I need to make time. And he really, like, bust out laughing. He was like, he really laughed hard in that, you know, kind of raspy, hoarse laugh.
Yeah.
And he was like, and I was very confused, and he was like, make time.
Yeah.
You haven't been able to make time. And then he, like, kept on laughing. So anyway, we haven't committed to doing the podcast. But for me, one of the, you know, you and I have talked, we'll talk about the podcast, but I think another thing is we haven't had anything that was like burning on our minds. When we started this, things like Lent or fasting were kind of, at least for me, burning on my mind.
Yeah.
And then we kind of got into a good flow, but, you know, we've thought about different things. We have lots of stuff kind of that we have lined up.
Yep.
But in this case, today we're going to talk about, we don't have a good succinct, like, concept, but it's the idea of why God lets bad things happen.
Well, why don't you say a little bit about what set this off, what put that as a priority for something to talk about today?
Well, some of it is, you know, this whole idea, I think probably for lots of people, but definitely for myself, has been something that I have thought about and at times struggled with a lot during my life. But in this past week, actually probably in the past few weeks, it's become more prominent in my mind or on my radar because of my job. And I work in a neonatal intensive care unit where there are, you know, kind of bad things that happen all the time. And not bad in, like, mistakes or bad in, like, an evil or malicious way necessarily, but pretty much every baby that comes into a NICU, pretty much, for the great majority, is not expected to be there by the families.
Yeah. Sure.
There can be some, you know, if there might be something that's identified in utero and they know that the baby may be born sick or with some special considerations, so that can be expected. But the great majority of the time, premature babies are born in an unexpected way. They come suddenly and traumatically. Or if there's some sort of unexpected thing that comes up, you know, when a newborn infant has been alive for a few hours or something, and babies will go to the NICU. So there's a lot of, not tragic, but there's a lot of tragedy in the way that parents will experience those births because it's completely unexpected, largely unwanted. And, you know, I think it just becomes very poignant because it happens to, the victim happens to be a newborn baby, sometimes an extremely small, weak, and underdeveloped or helpless baby. And it seems very unjust.
Right.
You know, and for me, you know, the whole reason I got down this path was because it happened with William.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it happened at that time where, you know, William came suddenly. Jen had a great pregnancy and took care of her body. She's always been healthy with exercise and her diet. He came early and he endured so much within the first 6 months of his life. He was in a NICU, he was in a PICU, he had all these surgeries to his brain. Obviously, there were times where he was in a lot of discomfort or pain, and it seemed, and I was very mad and angry at God for why he would let things happen, why he would let that happen.
Yeah.
You know, and 2 years after William was born, probably about, 2 years after William was born, Gabriel was born early and was only alive for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very difficult too. And, you know, and we've been very blessed to have William in our life and to learn so much about life and about God through him. But in entering this specialty of healthcare, you know, I see it all the time, and families struggle with the same kinds of questions. And in the past few weeks, we've had an unusual amount of infants that have passed away. Usually in NICUs, the incidence of babies not surviving is very, very low.
Yep.
Because, at least these days, partially because of, you know, modern medicine, we're good at keeping infants or patients alive. But a lot of times if there's, you know, tragic outcomes or losses, a lot of times they just happen like around the time of birth. So for the great majority of the time, if babies make it to the NICU, for the great majority of the time, they would not pass away. And we've had a few. And so it came up recently because I was talking to a father this week, and one of the things that he was struggling with was, you know, he said something like how his wife was having a hard time. And he said, you know, I have faith, I believe, but in the back of my mind, I know that it's not really going to happen, or I know that it's false. And it reminded me that, you know, a lot of times we go through these things where we either believe and then are let down. Like we have faith that something's going to happen and then are let down when it doesn't. Or we're afraid to believe because we really fear that it's whatever it is not going to happen.
Hmm.
And so I feel like I've just heard it so much. It really brought it to this, you know, to the forefront of my mind, where I think people really do struggle with this idea of why would God let, if God is so powerful and all-knowing and can do anything, why would God, first, I guess a couple things, why would God let bad things happen?
Hmm, period.
Right. Period. Another one would, why would God create, if God created everything, why would God create sin? Or why would God create either bad people or allow bad people to turn into bad people?
Yeah.
And so I just feel like it's one of the things that, as particularly as Catholics, but as all Christians, I'm sure, probably struggle with. Like, why, you know, this, we're not podcasting today about evil or the devil or even suffering per se as a theme. But, the, you know, for me, it's this constant struggle and question is like, why, you know, why would this benevolent, supposedly all-loving, but all-powerful and all-knowing God allow these things to happen?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that classical formulation, if evil exists, then either God is not all-powerful because he can't stop it, or he's not all-good because he allows it, right? There must be, and so people assume then that, or the critics, some critics might assume that because they're suffering, there therefore cannot be God, or because evil exists, or because bad things can happen to good people, therefore there cannot be an all-powerful and all-loving and all-good God that is in charge of things, or that is running the show, so to say.
Or maybe that because those things exist, that's evidence that God is not there. Right. Like, you know, I think in a linear kind of way, it's like, well, if there's this benevolent, all-powerful, all-loving, all-knowing Wizard of Oz, and he can do all this, but then there's this other thing that is prevalent in our world, suffering and violence and conflict, well, then maybe, or not even maybe, well, then that's the proof that there is no God. Because if there was a God that you say is your God, why would he allow this to happen?
Yeah, and I think that's a source of, in fact, this question is a question around which a lot of people center their faith or their belief or their disbelief. And, you know, I think there are quite a number of people who at some point in their lives come to a point of not believing because of this thing, because of either something that's personally happened to them or because they look around and see terrible things happening to other people. And then conversely, I think other people do believe also because they feel very blessed with their lives. And so it's like, okay, well, the presence of goodness, therefore, is also evidence of God, of, you know, tremendous goodness. And I think that's just the flip side of the coin, because then, well, that's great for you. It's great that, you know, your life has been very positive in that regard. But what about for people whose life is full of misery and suffering, right? If we're to say that, if someone is to say that they know that the God exists because they're blessed with good things, then that same line of argumentation should say that people whose lives are not blessed with good things should not come to believe in God.
But you know what? Unfortunately, I don't think I've ever met someone that believes for that reason. I've met a lot of people that are very faith-filled, devout, you know, Christians who appreciate the good things in their life. But I'm not sure if I've ever met someone that's like, you know what, there's just so much goodness in my life, and I feel like I've been blessed, that my logic is I must have been blessed by something or someone, and that's why I believe in God. I think more often people who are, well, this is just anecdotally for me, you know, people who I know who are faith-filled, who are, you know, just, you know, devoutly religious or have a strong sense of faith, you know, I'm envious of them sometimes because they can sort of live in that joy and appreciation to see all the goodness that when they see a beautiful morning, they're like, you know, praise be to God. I'm envious of that. I don't always feel that way. I think more often than not, I probably identify a lot, even though I do have faith. I identify with people that are scorned and hurt and bitter because maybe they wanted to believe or maybe they did believe, and something happened, and they're just so hurt by it. And I think that is a big reason why the counterargument that God does not exist because of all the suffering is so powerful for some people. Because whatever bad happened, or whatever the absence of good, or the loss of hope, or the mourning of, you know, a future that was denied to them, is so personally painful to them. That that's enough to propel them down that line of logic.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I see a lot of students, if I ask my students, why do you believe in God? Or what's your evidence for God existing? They list off all the positive things. And so part of it, I mean, obviously I'm dealing with a very specific subset of the population, right? People who are just coming into their full use of reason and things like that. But now I bring it up because for them, clearly a lot of the reason for why they believe in God is because things are going well in their lives. Mm-hmm. And then when I ask for those, you know, students who don't believe in God, many of them begin to cite, well, my father died of cancer, mm-hmm. right? So that's how a point taken about what you said about some faith-filled people having such devotions and such faith, regardless of whether things are going well or not in their lives. And yet I'm not sure that, you know, really devoted, faith-filled people are all that commonplace, actually, right? I mean, for people that call themselves Catholic or Christian or even religious, I'm not sure the majority of people that call themselves religious are so deeply faithful that regardless of what's happening in their lives, they're gonna stay strong in their faith, you know. Yeah. But this is also colored by the kinds of people that we have conversations of faith with, right? Mm-hmm. So you might not have a lot of conversations of faith with people who have kind of a tepid faith life, mm-hmm. right? Or for whom religion is something kind of just a feature that runs in the background. But I mean, I think I do, just because there are a lot of kids who have to take my class. And so because of that, no, they have this kind of setup, which is, okay, well, my parents, I believe in God, quite frankly, because my parents have told me, and I trust my parents, and my school affirms this, and I trust my school, and things are going pretty well in my life, and I'm sort of told, actually, that these are things that come from God, and I should thank God for it, mm-hmm. right? And so, therefore, as long as good things keep happening, I guess God keeps being there, yeah. right? And, you know, that feeds into that narrative. But, what are your thoughts on that? Why does God allow these things to happen? How have you wrestled with that?
I was actually just telling one of the sisters of Mercy at Mercy the other day about when William was in the hospital, how I was so angry. I was just really angry. And it wasn't anger. I did not doubt that God existed, actually. Because prior to that, there had been instances that for my own personal self and my own personal journey and faith evolution sort of validated to me, you know, what I believe. But, you know, William was in the NICU for about 16 weeks, you know, about 4 months. And he, you know, had a really rough ride, and then he was home for a few weeks. And you were with me the morning when, you know, he stopped breathing and he had to go to the hospital. And it was very difficult because it was, you know, kind of that concept that people talk about, you know, like the bandage being ripped off or the scab being, you know, torn off and the wound being reopened. Because when he had to go to Loma Linda, it wasn't even that we were just starting over. It was like, it was even worse. It seemed like it was not even seemed. It was worse than it was before.
Yeah.
Because of the degree of what had happened. Basically, he has stopped breathing for several minutes. Mm-hmm. And he already had a condition where he had excessive fluid in his brain and not a lot of cortical tissue left. And so it just massively worsened, you know, his neurological state. So I was, you know, all the progress that we felt that we had made in the NICU when he was in the PICU, it just, all of it was gone. And it just felt like so much of our hope was, it felt like the hope was taken from us.
Yeah.
It felt very cruel.
Yeah.
And so I remember there was a chaplain that came into our room, and he asked if we wanted to, if he could pray for William. I think that's what it was. And so Jen stood up and she went beside the bed and, you know, and she was ready to pray. And then he looked at me and he asked me if I wanted to join them. And I was just so furious. I was furious at him and I was furious at God because, like, I just didn't think I could do it. You know, it'd taken so much out of us to be in the NICU and to go through everything we did. And there's just so many mornings where I woke up and I wasn't sure if I could, like, complete the day. And somehow we'd complete the day. And when I went to bed that night, I was just so exhausted and just drained. And then just start again after a few hours of sleep, I'd wake up again. And it was the worst. And so he asked if I wanted to join them. And I said, I was just furious, like in a rage. And I just said, no, I do not want to join you. And I went out. I just left the room. I left the hospital. I went out into the parking lot. And it was really hot. That area, around San Bernardino, where that shooting, kind of not too far from where that shooting happened. And I just sat in the car. And I don't know if it was Father Rich. I have a feeling it probably was Father Rich when I would process it later on, you know, why I was so angry. I think it took someone else to sort of verbalize it for me. They're yeah. like, well, you know, of course you're angry, or something like, of course you're angry if you believe that there's a God that can do anything, a God that loves you and knows you and knows your son and loves his creation, all of creation. If you believe that, and then you also believe, and then you have experienced what you've experienced, then of course it makes sense for you to be angry that the God who can do everything either chose not to do anything or didn't care to do something. And I think that's exactly what it felt. Because it was never a question of whether if I've believed God existed. It wasn't that at all.
Mm.
It was just that I believe God existed, but he was a jerk. He didn't care. Or if he cared, then it was one of these, you know, kind of stupid things that we would hear, like, well, everything happens for a reason, or it's part of God's plan. And it just seemed to be like a very terrible and cruel, and we felt expendable in whatever plan this was. Like, okay, if this is part of God's plan, well, this really sucks for us.
Yeah.
Like, we really got the short end of the stick. Like, we got the raw deal in this. Or if everything happens for a reason, well, hooray for whoever gets the good end of the bargain, but we got the not good end. So my own thoughts, you know, at the time especially were like, I know a lot of people were like, well, I don't believe that there's a cruel God. I just believe that I was foolish to believe that there was this God that could do this in the first place.
Mm.
'Cause I think a lot of people might feel betrayed or hurt and like, well, why did I even believe that in the first place? But for me, it wasn't like that. It was like, just so mad. Like, what kind of a God is this that would do this? And for me, it very much was like, not whether God exists or not, but why would God let this horrible thing happen many times over to my son who had never even had the opportunity to sin at all? Like, he never had literally like a moment of his life where he could have even sinned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He never had a moment where he could literally, except for the cry when he was born, for the first several weeks, he didn't even have the opportunity to cry.
Yeah.
Because he was intubated. And then why would God let that happen? Why would God do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really struggled with it for a long time because I don't know if I even, I mean, I didn't struggle, I never really thought about it in a very academic way. I was just very pissed.
Yeah.
Pissed that that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see it, you know, like in this past week, you know, with this family and this father who was just, you know, they're so let down, I think, let down by the church. And it's happened to close friends of mine too, where they've been in suffering and they've sought consolation or some kind of, you know, solace from the church and have left feeling like betrayed or angry or whatever it is. And so, I don't really have a good logical thing to say, but that's where a lot of this energy comes from.
Yeah. And so if someone were to ask you, right, well, you had this very powerful experience yourself, and, you know, what is your response to that? I mean, so clearly, you know, the faith is still there, right? It did not affect whether this idea of God exists, but it just made, you know, in some part, it just hurt, right? It's not that the person isn't there. It's that the person has hurt you and you want to know why.
Yeah, and I think for me, I guess if someone were to ask me, so, especially with what you've been through, why do you still believe in God?
Yeah.
All this bad stuff happened. Well, for me, you know, I guess first and foremost, there's been things in my life that I believe have been intentionally done by God to demonstrate that God does exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the way I've sort of either reconciled it or come to try to understand it is afterwards, actually, I'm sure it was Father Rich that I had these talks with about, because we had a lot of talks about the idea of free will.
Yeah.
And this idea of free will, I always only considered in terms of our free will, like as people. I don't even remember the names of these authors, but Father Rich would recommend certain authors and talk about even like the free will of like nature and biology.
Yep.
That, for instance, why would God allow a volcano to erupt and hurt animals or the environment or people? And one of the things that is a theme that he would talk about to me and then I would read about in some of these books was like, well, God respects the free will of nature too. He respects the free will of all creation. Mm-hmm. That it's the free will of nature, although maybe not a conscious will in the same way that you and I choose to do something, to explode or to, you know, to have something unfold. And so God is even respectful of the free will of any of his creations to sin. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when sin enters the world or when sin pervades in the world, the fact that God doesn't come in like a parent or like a principal or a teacher, you know, is the argument that like it's God's free will. Mm-hmm. Or God's love of creation that he allows free will to occur. So for me, it's has a lot more to do with, well, trying to reconcile, like, well, as I've come to grow older and maybe slightly more mature in my thoughts, that, you know, to be okay or to have this understanding that not everything is fair. Like, people want everything to be fair and just and equal.
Yeah.
But no one is surprised at the thought or the idea or even the words when someone says that life is not fair. And I believe that life is not fair.
Right.
And so it's something I've had to try to come to terms with. Life is not fair. Sometimes, and maybe to a greater extent for us than for some others, maybe it's more unfair to us sometimes than to other people. And that is not only just the way it is. It's because there's free will for all creation, for sin to exist. And, you know, just like, you know, any of these kids, like William and someone else. I don't hate other kids because, I don't hate Matthew because he's born without special needs. Or I'm not resentful of him or jealous in any way of him. In my mind, I'm just like, oh, well, it's, they're just born different. They were dealt a different hand. Mm-hmm. It is not fair.
Yep.
But that's how it is.
Right.
And I don't know. I think strangely, I've come to appreciate the disparity in like William's ability and with our own struggles and stuff like that. For me, I guess I still believe because more than anything else, God has shown me that he is still there. But even if he hadn't, I don't know, it's hard for me to say. In Father Mike's podcast, he was talking, in the most recent one, he was talking about, like, Daniel, the prophet Daniel, and how he had, you know, I don't think they were brothers. He had, like, three other friends that were sold into slavery with him. And at one point, I know nothing about, like, biblical history or whatever, but, you know, whoever, the king or whatever was telling them, all you have to do is bow down to, basically worship him or bow down to him or pay tribute to him. And he said something like, and they refused to, and he said, well, where is your God now? And they said something like, well, or he said, he challenged them like, will your God save you now? And they said something like, well, our God can save us. And if it's his will, you know, then that's what he would do. But even if he will not, we will not bow down to you. Like even they recognize that he may not save them. Mm-hmm. But even if he will not, they still have the faith. I honestly don't know if I would have like faith that strong. That like if I really was believing and I really needed God to come through again or whatever, that I would still believe despite that, you know, in those circumstances. I don't think that I would. I always resonate, and this is partially why Matthew's named after Matthew, or, you know, in sort of like a tribute to the book of Matthew, because one of my favorite, I'm pretty sure, but even Todd is still okay, but like, I'm pretty sure from the book of Matthew, there's that line that, Lord, I do believe, but forgive me for my unbelief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so anyway, I wish I had some more articulate answer to why I believe. Other than that, I believe that God has shown me that God is there. Right. Now, despite that, he's also allowed bad things to happen. And my only explanation is that I may not like it. It may be really sucky for us, and my son may have had to pay the price for that. But it's because I also believe that God loves all creation, and he has allowed the free will of nature, of anything, to, you know, whatever, ravage my son's, you know, like, early life, or, you know, inflict harm or pain or suffering on him or on us.
Hmm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, that the crux of the question, and in fact, I think the fact that that question eludes such easy answer is what also gives such eternal and powerful strength to the whole operation of faith, right? To the whole religion. We have, when you think about it, we have our scriptures, we have our rituals, we have our way of being Catholic, in many ways centered around this very question of why does God allow suffering? Why does God create suffering? Why do we suffer? And then how do we respond to suffering? I mean, I think sort of any of these related questions is sort of a doorway to the same room, and it's an empty room, or it's maybe, if not empty, it's a dark room, right? Mm-hmm. There's that we just navigate once we're in it, right? And we don't sort of find an answer, or there's no sort of illumined space that one thing can, someone can say that can respond to it. And I think precisely because of that, people feel cheated when given an answer like, well, it's, you know, everything happens for a reason, or it's just part of the plan, or whatever it might be. Even the answers that, you know, have been going through my head, or that you've articulated, that Jesus respects the freedom of all creation, right? Or that, yes, Jesus, God allows bad things to happen, but he also allows good things to happen, right? And sort of any one element of this, I think, is unsatisfactory by itself. And it's interesting then that, again, I think you can look at sort of the entirety of religion as centered around this question. And not just the Catholic religion, and not just Christianity, but, you know, the first noble truth of Buddhism is that life is suffering, right? And so the whole, you know, the other noble truths center around the idea that suffering can be transformed, at the least, if not eliminated or dissolved. And so this question, I think, is at the very heart of spirituality, and as such, it requires, I think, the entirety of our experience and our being to enter into that question. And I think what's difficult is then for those who try to address such questions on merely an intellectual or academic level, then those intellectual or academic responses will come across as anemic or weak, because it's not purely an intellectual or academic question. It means so much more than that. I mean, it involves your entirety of being. And I think you're sort of hinting at that, and also in terms of coming at it with why you would still believe, you know, how to make sense of it. I mean, you begin to voice out why, and your reasons for voicing out why the belief is still there, or how you respond to this, go back to your lived experience, right? Rather than, I mean, of course, maybe conversations with Father Rich help, or anything you might have read helps. But ultimately, you know, you take into consideration every last part of your life, and that picture as a whole then portrays something. Yeah, so to that end, you know, I'm not going to try to to answer why God, to speak on God's behalf. Well, he allows it because, yeah. One, you know, two.
Well, and I think that's another thing. We, as people, I think we really do like it when there's a logic or a linear explanation as to why. You know what I mean? Like, we don't like the fact that there can be a question that's unsolved. In fact, that's one of the main criticisms. You know, Mick talked about it when, like, last weekend, how, like, in Lost, you know, such a great show, except that all the questions were unanswered. Yeah. You know, people are really don't like that. The cliffhanger for, you know, this season of Walking Dead, people don't like the fact that they don't have what they were expecting. You know, they don't have this finality, or they don't have, like, the information that they were seeking. And I think if someone were to ask me, if I really think about it, I think one of the reasons I still believe is because I still want to know why.
Yeah.
Like, on a very personal, specific level, like, maybe my faith is driven because I still want to know why it happened.
Yeah.
Why any of it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I remember, I don't think I would get emotional right now, but, like, I remember when, we, you know, a few months ago when we went to go see the Pope when he visited, I thought about what I would ask the Pope if I could just have a moment, like, away from the crowds and from the chaos and everything that was happening. Not even with Jen or with William. If it was just me. If I could just ask the Pope. If I could just talk to the Pope. I realized that I wanted to ask him I wanted to ask him if he could ask God why it all happened.
Mm.
And I'm not not even angry. I just want to know why it happened. And I think for me, that's part of why I'm in my own expression of it, why I'm still faithful to the church.
It's interesting that you, you know, bring up the Pope in this regard. He, when he visited the Philippines, he went to Tacloban, where that that typhoon hit and people died. You know, hundreds of people died, and he said he wanted so badly just to visit. And he was talking about all the pain and suffering that people had faced, and he said, in the face of such tremendous pain and loss, we wonder why these things happen. And he said, the Pope said simply, I come to be with you in your pain, in your suffering, and I have no words. He said, I can only be here in silence with you in your suffering and in your questioning. And then he said, look at Christ. Christ, who looks at the sky and says, my God, why have you forsaken me? And he said, Christ is also here in silence, in pain, and in questioning. And it was just such a powerful moment, because then I think the Christian understanding of the Christian mode, or the Christian, I guess, experience of God is then not just limited to this experience of us sort of being down here, looking up and wondering why. Our experience of God is having God. Yeah, I mean, that's still the experience, right? We're still down here wondering why. And yet, at the same time, our God is with us, suffering and wondering why. And I thought that was what a powerful way to look at it, because again, I think it keeps the mystery open. You mentioned the question of not having the answer, right? That we want to always have the answers, and the very nature of religious mystery, Christian mystery, is that unsolvable question, right? That unanswerable question. And it made me think, last week there was, or 2 weeks ago, we had this really great speaker come to Loyola and talk about things. And she hit on that a little bit. That wasn't the focus of her talk. The focus of her talk was more about the cosmos. And so this idea of free of nature and the cosmos having freedom was very much a, you know, part of what she was talking about. And you know, the question of things like hurricanes and earthquakes came up. And she said something. She said it almost very casually. And she said, well, you know, these things suggest to us that the way of the universe is life, passion, death, and resurrection. And that's not, and there's a reason why that's the heart of the Christian teaching. And then she just moved on. But it was one of those moments that, like, gosh, it was really a moment of illumination in my mind. Then that, yes, that is the cycle, or that is the mechanism of, for her, she said, this is the mechanism of the universe, right? Things suffer, they die, and they come into new life. And that is, that's sort of across the board. And that is experience. And then she went on to say, that is the mechanism by which the love of the cosmos unfolds, which I thought was just a very beautiful way to put it. And I think it's also the mechanism by which the love of God unfolds. And this, again, our faith and the scripture of our faith and the tradition of faith has that theme all the way through. I mean, the theme of the Old Testament of, you know, the Hebrew people suffering in slavery, then wandering in the desert, and then trying to find their own land, and then being conquered by other peoples and waiting for a Messiah to save them. The entirety of the Old Testament is mostly suffering with these brief reprieves, right? And then even Christ, the story finds its climax in suffering and death, right? And then even although there's a resurrection, then the next step after that is the Acts of the Apostles and Paul, whose lives also end in suffering and death, right? And so that, again, that cycle and that unfolding is the whole theme. And I think it suggests then that we can enter into an experience of faith, an experience of God, at any one of those parts of the cycle. And yet, once we embark on that, we will not be spared of any of the other parts, right? So you can enter into the, you know, you can be born into this experience of new life and have a portion of your life that feels like resurrection, right? And then come to know God through that. Yet we should then therefore not be surprised or not be, I mean, I guess we can't escape then once we're on that train, right? That part of that cycle then becomes or will be, you know, suffering and death. Likewise, you can enter into an experience of God through suffering, and that experience of suffering will not save you, or will not will mean that you will go through that suffering, and that death and resurrection will be on the other end of it as well, right? So that there's this constant movement, I guess, that means that we'll never be free of the suffering, but because of that, we'll also never be free of the resurrection, right? I mean, in other words, the suffering is guaranteed so that, or and also the new life is also guaranteed, you know. And I think about your experience and how much faith, I mean, if, you know, William has been a big example here. And I think about how much faith and new life he has brought to you and to your family and to so many other people. And again, that's not to say that his suffering needed to happen in order for this other stuff to happen. But I think it follows, again, this pattern, right? That there's been this suffering and there's been this new life, right? Yeah.
Well, and I think related to that, you're talking about the cosmos and stuff. I know I periodically will, like, talk to you about it. But, like, you know, the book The Sparrow, I think part of what resonates so strongly with me is the fact that that's what it's about. I mean, at the heart of it, it's not going to spoil the story. But the, you know, the priest, Sandoz or whatever, you know, he, for people who aren't unfamiliar with the premise, is that in the story, Earth gains evidence that there's life, intelligent life in the universe. And, you know, so it's kind of marred with all this political, you know, issues and people trying to decide who's going to go out and what they're going to do. And so without wanting to wait too long, the Jesuits decide to send out their own expedition. Because in their mind it was that, you know, if we have other brothers and sisters under God out there, well, we have to meet them. Mm-hmm. You know, so they sound something out. But it's called The Sparrow because there's, you know, things that obviously it's a story and there's, like, you know, the whole plot. There's things that happen. But it's called The Sparrow because it comes also from Matthew where, I don't remember who says it, but, you know, the verse was, are not two sparrows sold for a cent? You know, I guess in the day, mm-hmm. I don't buy sparrows, but they're very cheap birds. Yeah. Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father's will. You know, this idea that, you know, even the smallest insignificant of events that happen in the world can only happen, you know, with God's knowledge or with his consent. Doesn't really help my case for why does God let bad things happen. But I think you're right. I think that's a universal that, you know, we want to be satisfied with some definitive or finite answer to why things happen. We like the reason. We like the logic. Mm. Even if what doesn't matter how complicated or intellectual or how simple the logic would be, we like it to be that way. And it's difficult when we can't have it. Mm. And that can be explained lots of ways, like, oh, well, who are we to try to understand the will? You know, yeah, all of that may be true, but we still don't like it. But also kind of what you were saying, to sort of like kind of wrap this up on more of a comical note, we all have our depictions, you know, like God, like a king. I think people like the idea of God as a king.
Yeah.
Like in heaven, in the clouds. And they like the feeling of the image of God as like a kind king with like a beard, like a kind king. And he protects the kingdom and bestows gifts on the kingdom. And we just, you know, if we follow the rules of the kingdom, then we'll have it. We'll have all the things that we deserve or whatever. People like the idea of like a kind king. And it can be nice and sometimes challenging with this idea. Well, maybe God's not the king that's on the kingdom, or maybe he is. But at the same time, God is also our brother who's on the cross asking why he was forsaken. But also in my conversation with, you know, the sister at the hospital the other day, we ended up talking about how people are also, they also like the depiction of Jesus as like the baby Jesus.
Yeah.
And I asked her if she had ever watched Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby. And she said no. So I proceeded to explain the scene when they are praying at dinner to Big Baby Jesus. I couldn't do it justice because I haven't memorized the scene. And even if I had memorized the scene, I probably would have massacred it. But I myself found it amusing that I was trying to recount. I was like, I hope this is not... I didn't use the word offensive or sacrilegious, but it was something like irreverent. I was like, I hope this is not too irreverent. But have you ever watched Talladega Nights? And so I proceeded to tell her the story about how whoever, Will Ferrell and the other guy, were praying to the Big Baby Jesus. I don't really know the rest, but it was funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of it goes to the image of God, right? And you know, as you mentioned that, I think our metaphors and images of God are important because in part they can be also a cause of suffering, right? I think if we see God as a kindly king that we enter and kneel before and say, oh, good king, give me this, and then he says no, right? Then, and if that's the primary image of it, then it does cause more suffering. And yet if we take seriously this idea that God is love, then certain things change because we do expect a kindly king. We do expect the kindly king to be fair, but we don't expect love to be fair. Mm-hmm. I think when you've gone through, when people have gone through several relationships, there's a very, that's just a truth that the love game is not a fair game. It's yeah. It's not fair. It doesn't do what you want it to do. Yeah. And it doesn't do according to what deserves to be done.
Yeah. Or babies aren't fair.
Yeah.
They're definitely not fair. And so baby Jesus,
fair enough.
Why would we have an expectation that the baby Jesus would be fair?
Yeah.
He's just a baby.
He's just a baby.
Right? Yeah. He can't even walk.
And he and babies can cause suffering to parents.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But right. So in both cases, whether we're talking about a baby or love itself, there is not an expectation for it to be fair. And then there's also, there's no expectation also that it is free of profound pain too.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that same cycle of sort of falling in love and brokenheartedness that underlines religion. You know, that is the story of, that's what underlines love. And people enter into love wholesale, right? You take all of it when you enter into it.
Yeah.
And so it is, we suppose, with our faith and with our God.
Well, does that conclude this episode?
As best as we can, I think so.
What is this, episode 9?
Yeah.
Good.